apologies, honourable members. I'll then allow a National Treasury to make their presentation. I think it's Dr. Mampo and your team, you are welcome. We'll give you 30 minutes maximum. You'll indicate if you want more time. And then we'll have deliberations, and then we'll look at the minutes, and then announcements, and then we'll close the meeting. Dr. Mampo Modise, with your team, you are welcome. Mampo, are you there? Or anybody else from Mr. Treasury? Yarin?
Chairperson?
Yes, sir. Yeah. Okay, I was asking, is Dr. Mampo on the platform?
I don't see Dr. Mampo on the platform, Chairperson.
No wonder. Who's
there? Are a number of Treasury officials.
So let me get who's leading the delegation then. PTGs, tell me.
Mali Zheng is joining now, sir.
Mali Zheng.
Okay.
Good morning, Chair. This is Laura Seme, the acting CEO for National Treasury. Just to confirm that our delegation will be led by Mali Zheng, who will do the briefing on the underspending on the Municipal Revenue Management Improvement Program. And then we will be shortly joined by Momo, the acting DG, who will lead the presentation of the MES. He just has to start off at SCOP, and he will be moving across.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you. Mary Jane, are you there? Good morning.
Good morning, Chair. Thank you very much. I got a bit confused, so I exited. I thought I was in a wrong meeting.
Okay. No. Sorry for
because sorry we understood that we have to brief the committee on the performance of the Municipal Revenue Management Improvement Program and FMS.
Sorry.
So we will take Chair.
Sorry for that. You are right. Let's say it's a briefing on Municipal Revenue Management Improvement Program. Again, basically looking at what has happened around expenditure and everything as far as municipalities are concerned. Thank you. And then,
yes, thank you very much, Chair. Yes. So we are okay. Responding to that request, and my colleague Sadesh Ramrathan will present. He is the champion for this project. But what I want to say here is that what we are going to reflect here is the state of local government finances at the moment, health, which we see rising indebtedness and creditors, and that obviously has got an impact on service delivery. And And what we also want to point is that this allocation is not a grant to municipalities. It is an allocation that is less than 200 million in a year. That is actually meant for us to use it to run some catalytic initiatives that would have an impact on municipal management of their revenue, because we have realized that the revenue management is one of the major issues that impact on the sustainability of our municipalities and therefore the state of their finances. So we are going to reflect how what we have done and what are some of the reasons why we could not spend the whole allocation in the process. But I think what is important for us is to actually realize that a lot of challenges that local government is faced with, a lot of them have got to do with the governance and weak administration and weakness in the councils that actually have a lot of impact in their ability even to also absorb the support that we are actually giving. So that also in a way tend to limit the impact of the interventions, because it is the factors that are impacting on what we do, but which we cannot do much about in terms of the way they present themselves. So Sadesh, if you can present, and then we can take questions. Thank you.
Chair, my hand is up.
Robin Sangini, please come in.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, it's quite disappointing to cut that National Treasury have sent the presentations late. One was even sent this morning, one was sent last night. So it's quite disappointing to hear that fact, and researchers couldn't do the normal brief that they are doing for the committee. So as the custodians of the country's fiscus, it's quite disappointing for them to actually send a presentation late, and that won't and must never be tolerated ever again. Thank you, Chair, because they know long in advance about these meetings.
Mary Jane, you hear that, and it doesn't give us enough chance to interrogate your presentation and our researchers before we come to the meeting. That you usually give up your things on time. I don't know what happened to this time. Can we then attend to that so that it doesn't happen again?
Thank you, Chair. We apologize for that. It won't happen again. We have lost the presentation now. Sadesh, where is it? Can you load it and then run it through, please?
Mary Jane and Chair, good morning. Honorable Chair, I'm not sure whether the Secretariat will load the presentation. Or should I flight it from my side? Okay, great. It's on the screen. Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members of the Standing Committee of Appropriation, all DDGs and DGs in attendance, and colleagues, all protocols observed. My name is Sadesh Ramjatan from National Treasury, and I will present this morning on the matter of underspending of the Municipal Revenue Management Improvement Program. So, Chair, before I go into the business of the day, allow me just to touch on the state of local government finance to set the scene. Of the 257 municipalities, there are 98 municipalities that adopted unfunded budgets for the 22-23 financial year. This immediately suggests that 98 municipalities plan to spend more than their revenue collected, which may include the inability to meet financial obligations. There is 175 municipalities identified as being in financial distress through assessing 13 indicators, and these are municipalities that may be on the brink of a crisis as per the State of Local Government Finances report. 219 municipalities that meet the Section 138 and 140 triggers, suggestive of financial problems and financial crisis with imminent service delivery failure. 151 municipalities that are deemed to be bankrupt and insolvent and are unable to pay creditors and third parties such as SARS and pension funds. Lastly, the group that will receive much attention is the 43 municipalities in crisis, municipalities that are deemed to be beyond the Section 154 support and require corrective mode of intervention to rescue. National Treasury is driving this process in collaboration with the provinces. Next slide, please. So quarter four results reemphasize this dismal state with municipalities owed 155 billion by their customers, and in turn owe creditors just under 90 billion, which includes Eskom and Water Board's outstanding debt of almost 40 billion and 15 billion respectively. And the reference here is made to the dark blue blocks on the right hand side of the screen. you would agree that that these numbers don't paint a good picture for local government. Next slide. At the heart, sorry, I've lost the presentation. Okay. At the heart of the failures to collect what is due and pay for services received is revenue management failures. These failures cut across the entire revenue value chain, which involves political and administrative leadership to enforce proper implementation of policies and legislation and encourage the culture to pay for services consumed. This may be the single most important plight municipalities face, leading to the $255 billion outstanding debt alluded to earlier. The pandemic of non-payment unfortunately has filtered into the government department as well, that also neglect to pay for services consumed and pay municipalities respectively. This has perpetuated, by the weak internal controls and lack of consequent management for non-implementation of revenue management processes. All of these points lead to the low revenue collection and the low revenue projections during the compilation of annual budgets, which in turn leads to an unfunded position during the adoption of the budget by councils. Lastly, municipalities cannot expect to generate revenue if the conduit to provide reliable services, which is the asset generating infrastructure, is not well maintained. This is a recipe for disaster. Next slide, please. Chair, as a result of these inefficiencies and challenges experienced by local government that gave birth to the Municipal Revenue Management Improvement Program, the objective of the program is very simple. It is to improve the generation of own revenue by local government to become self-sustainable, with emphasis on the inefficiencies, on the efficiencies within the value chain, revenue value chain, by providing reliable services to communities to improve the quality of life. Next slide, please. To achieve this objective, Chair, there are a range of activities that need to be covered. These activities include optimizing revenue sources available to municipalities to improve efficiency within the revenue value chain that encompasses completion of revenue ultimately. In achieving this, it requires coordination with different stakeholders, initiate research and development norms and standards, capacitate practitioners on best practices, and explore innovative and smart solutions to improve revenue, the revenue environment within the municipality. Next slide. The program unfortunately encountered some setbacks as a result of the underspending in the 21-22 financial year. Due to the COVID, monies had to be surrendered to aid the pandemic. There were also procurement delays in the program. Firstly, the partnership with COCTA for the cost of supply studies in municipalities that defaulting on the payment to ESCOM has declined at the approval stage, was declined at the approval stage by COCTA. And this was just before appointing service providers to assist with the project. Secondly, there were delays in National Treasury's Chief Procurement Office, and the intended transversal for smart meters was subsequently delayed. The major part of the funding was for the smart meter solution in the four pilot sites. This had to be postponed until the transversal is finalized. However, we are glad to announce that this is now back on track. The next slide. Nevertheless, of the challenges associated with the project itself or the program itself, on the revenue management side, various other initiatives were concluded. To better understand the revenue base within the jurisdiction of municipalities. There was the socioeconomic profiles developed for 257 municipalities. Additionally, economic and viability studies were undertaken in the Northwest, Gauteng Province, Eastern Cape, and the Northern Cape provinces, and the municipalities within the local municipalities within those provinces. This exercise informed us of the potential revenue that can be derived from customers, from the customer base for the municipality, that is converting the economic base into potential revenue for the municipality. We have developed a tariff setting tool that is user-friendly to assist municipalities develop cost-reflective tariffs and to phase in these tariffs should it not be the case. Other tools included enhancement of the budget assessment tool to address the large liability owed to creditors, as many of the municipalities indicate that this is the cause of the unfunded position during adoption. A tool was developed to reconcile the general valuation role to the billing system to ensure completeness of revenue, and we have introduced a revenue masterclass to assist the crisis municipalities with best practice procedures and processes to optimize the revenue base and the potential revenue that can be derived from the base and to improve the cash flow within municipalities. Next slide, please. The reality is that the demand for funding exceeds the allocation this program receives, as our DDG eloquently suggested earlier in an introduction. It is therefore essential that catalytic projects are identified which will have the biggest impact in revenue for municipalities. The intention is that this program will create greater awareness within municipalities and clarify stakeholder roles in revenue management. Furthermore, assessments will be undertaken to keep abreast of the situation on the ground. This will include supporting the budget analyst during the budget process period, supporting municipalities placed under interventions, and assessment to understand the root causes of revenue collection failures so that appropriate support can be developed for the corrective action and implementation. More work will be dedicated to improve tariff setting, as this is one of the biggest areas of leakage. To supplement this area of work, the cost of supply studies will be undertaken to inform cost-reflective tariffs, and the completion of the economic and financial viability studies in the remaining province, as this gives us a good understanding of the potential within those municipalities and the conversion of the revenue base to revenue into the municipalities. On the electricity side, and to address the outstanding debt issue, partnerships will be fostered to authenticate the bills from ESCOM, as many municipalities are unable to verify the correctness of the bill received from ESCOM, and to verify the fund replacement of meters in municipalities around the large power users in the 43 municipalities. And again here, we're looking at the 43 municipalities in crisis. Next slide. The ownership issue of government property contributes to the revenue challenge and must be addressed decisively, as government cannot be seen to be owing municipalities. This is bad publicity for other customers owing municipalities or willing to pay for services to municipalities. To improve customer information in municipalities, we're exploring the link to link the databases of Home Affairs and SASA to that of the municipality customer base. This will improve the correctness of customer information during opening an account so that bills can be issued to the correct customer. Ultimately, this will be extended to SARS to profile customers accordingly and to commercial on behalf of municipalities. And this is in relation to the homeowners or the home bonds that they hold with these banks. Since a major part of the program funding is towards smart solution, we are busy with issuing a transversal tender for smart meters, which will regulate prices, receive value for money, and be cost effective. We are all aware that there's a number of cases reported on corrupt activities associated with smart meter procurement. And this transversal will eliminate such, and the added value will be on the quality assurance of the solution received. This process, Chair, will surely save municipalities on cost of going out on their own. Lastly, Chair, the transversal will assist the 4 pilot sites identified with a smart solution, and we're hoping that this will be very soon. Next slide. Chair, in conclusion, it is recommended that the Standing Committee on Appropriation notes the financial position of municipalities, notes the challenges associated with revenue management in municipalities, notes the setbacks in the program, notes the initiatives to date to improve the cash flows in municipalities, and notes the intent of the program in the near future. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you. It's the next presentation available now. Momo. Novanda.
I wonder if Momo is joined already, because maybe we can take discussions on this one.
That's fine. Honourable members, you heard that to the acting DG, Mr. Momo, is also attending another committee, so he'll be joining us after that. So perhaps let's get indication from the honourable members, those who would like to interact with the presentation. Honourable members, you know how we do it. Can I have an indication of our members who would like to interact with the presentation?
Okay, let me attempt, because this presentation was sent so late, so it's sorry. And it really makes it difficult for us really to do our work and to engage with it, because it's sent so late. And it's quite important information that is being shared surrounding the municipalities. So really, it's quite disappointing to do our work like this. They presented that there are 151 municipalities that are bankrupt and insolvent. I would like to know from National Treasury, what are they doing in terms to assist those municipalities? Because if those municipalities are bankrupt and insolvent, which will mean that services is not going down to the poor. And the accountability environment within the municipalities is already so contaminated by corruption and fraud. What are they doing to ensure that when they are allocating the next budget for the other municipalities or for all of the municipalities, that those monies doesn't go or fall into the same hands of the same fraud individuals and corrupt individuals? what systems have they put into place? Because one would have believed from their side, they need to also have some form of systems in place to ensure that the country's money is safe and is going for the intended purpose that it's going to, and that the poor doesn't suffer by the end of the day, that are not getting services on time from these municipalities. It's bad what is happening in Eastern Cape, sorry, in all other rural provinces with municipal budgets. And then I would also like to maybe get a breakdown of the 151 municipalities, which areas do they fall into, districts and local municipalities, if we can give a breakdown on that, and the 98 of the unfunded budgets, if we can have a breakdown, which municipalities are we talking about. I think it will just help us also, Chair, in our oversight as members of Parliament, if we know directly which municipalities are we talking about. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Ntlangwini. Honourable members.
Chair, it's Honourable Sarupin.
Kaiso. Sarupin, Kaiso, who else? Okay, Honourable Sarupin, please come in.
Chair, thanks very much, and apologies if mother's connection breaks. I do have load shedding at the moment. Chair, let me thank National Treasury for the presentation, which shows a very dire state of municipalities. And I was aware that there were problems, but 59% of municipalities being bankrupt and insolvent is quite a troubling statistic. Chair, what I would like to understand in terms of this program to improve generation of own revenue and become self-sustainable is, in embarking on this program, has National Treasury actually identified why municipalities aren't actually doing some of the things they've identified? Why are they not collecting revenue, for example? Is it political interference? And so on. And then with regards to Eskom debt, Chair, I note that the presentation notes that the Eskom debt from municipalities is now 39.8 billion rands. And Chair, I do think that we are reaching a point where we've got to look as the Appropriations Committee at whether or not it is time to start top slicing budget allocations from local governments when the Division of Revenue comes to settle this Eskom debt once and for all. Because I think that if we do not begin to take some drastic action around Eskom's debt, then we're going to be stuck with this load shedding scenario for far, far longer than we would hope to, and there's no end in sight at this stage. And then lastly, Chair, I'm going to keep banging on this drum, because in every meeting we've had of late, I have found that there is a lot of duplication going on in governments. And yesterday I made the point of the air quality management and the fact that municipalities are doing the same thing as the Department of Environmental Affairs. In this regard, has National Treasury spoken, in conceptualizing this program, spoken to COGTA and the provincial treasuries about what they're doing in terms of municipal support? Because the state across the board is actually spending a lot of money on support programs to municipalities to help them with their budgeting, and we still end up with unfunded budgets to help them with their audit process, et cetera, et cetera. And somehow, despite all of the support, these municipalities are still failing. So I do think that the value for money question needs to come into play as well. Considering that we've got a lot of programs to try and support municipalities, we see by the state of municipalities that these various programs aren't working. And I want to know what National Treasury is going to do to streamline this to make sure there's not another program that is duplicated by national COGTA, provincial COGTA, and provincial treasuries. Thanks very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Sarupin, Honorable Kaiso.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Just on the defiance campaign against the doctor, I've decided just to come in here. Honorable Chair, let me also raise a serious concern around the
state, you know, presentation that has been put before us. I don't really think that the treasury was on top of these problems that have presented here now, one would imagine it was going to be very necessary that we apply our money very critically around challenges that our municipalities, local municipalities are facing. I think it's a very bitter financial viability of a number of municipalities across the country.
Honorable Kaiso, we can hardly hear you. I don't know why. Your spot, just try to get a better spot. Just move around. They definitely won't be able to answer you because we can hardly hear you. Can you start again so that we...
Can you hear me now, Chair?
Yes, we can hear you. Manana Pomas, Unganyagaz.
Okay. So I'm saying, Chair, I want to also express a serious concern around what to analyze and be able to respond to the report that has been given to us this morning. Because it is very, very important given the situation that a number of our municipalities, majority of them are facing the serious problem. The improvement that we see is
Honorable Kaiso. I think we've lost Honorable Kaiso, honorable members. Any other honorable member would like to come in? We are really struggling with connectivity today.
Chairperson.
Honorable Peters, please come in.
Chairperson, good morning. I want to also take this opportunity to thank the presenters for the presentation, but also to raise my concern with regard to the us receiving the presentation so late. Chairperson, let me join Honorable Ranguini with regard to the breakdown of that 59%, the 151 bankrupt and insolvent municipalities. And also just to find out whether the top of the iceberg that is appearing above the waters, what it means, and also to find out whether there is any consequences, especially for those municipalities and the leadership in particular, the MMs and the CFOs who allow the municipalities to pass unfunded budgets. I'm saying the MMs and the CFOs because they do present to the council the reports as well as the budgets, and they are able to alert them when the situation is actually getting into the red. And Chairperson, just from this slide number two, page two of the slides, you can actually see that we are actually in very dangerous situations, even before you look at the red. If you look at municipalities already in financial distress, it actually tells you that we are moving at a faster pace to the bankruptcy and insolvency already by the number of those in financial distress, the numbers of those who pass, who operate on unfunded budgets. And Chairperson, this is actually a very worrying slide, followed by slide 3 itself, which tells you already that that slide, you don't even have to get a consultant to understand it. I believe that arrow or that lightning that shows the crisis that is hitting our municipalities, the scattering of our people around because of probably lack of services, because already if the crisis is hitting, there would be a big challenges. The other thing, Chairperson, I have not been able to follow some of the presentations well because of load shedding where I am. I'm actually sitting in the dark. There was a slide. Let me just quickly, Chairperson, go through. The slide that speaks to what have we achieved to date. They indicate that they have developed socioeconomic profiles. They have the studies, viability, financial viability studies were done in local municipalities, in particular in those four provinces. I want to know when is if you do the four provinces, what about the remaining five provinces? And the issue of the tariff setting tool, I think it has been ages since around the 2000s that the issue of the billing system and has been raised with municipality. It was even during the time of President Mbeki. So I just want to know how long does it take National Treasury to help the municipalities to deal with the challenges in their billing system, and whether the studies that were done in that period during the program called Senza Manj, whether that billing system actually was tested, and what was the results of that study, because I know that it was done. But also, Chairperson, what is National Treasury and the Department of COPTA doing to really, I would want to say, hold these municipalities by the head? Because, you know, Chairperson, we just emerged from the local government elections. And by the time the results of the viability study that is being done is ready, it will be due for another elections, and probably elections for national and then elections for municipalities. So the consistency at a political level to do follow through with regard to this, I want to know what will be done, but also whether National Treasury is part of the team that would be at all times inducting the new leadership of municipality, especially the political leadership, because it is important that even before the mayors are inaugurated, they actually know the standing, financial standing of their municipalities, so that they don't come in with preconceived ideas of what they are going to do and what they are going to do, because if they know what the budget looks like, they wouldn't be coming with ideas on what they are going to do, because the first thing that then happens in municipalities is the battle of the leadership through the mayor and the MMCs with the administration with regard to what needs to be done and how it must be done. So my concern is whether they come in with the necessary background information, understanding the financial situation of those municipalities, and is National Treasury part of that particular process. And say thank you very much, but also a request that in future we be given the documents way ahead of time so that one can go through them. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Peters. Honorable Sheikh Imam.
Thank you, Chair. I'm on my way to the airport, so I'll put my video off, but I think you can confirm it is me. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for that presentation. One question for Chair. I know you have limited powers. What do you identify as the root cause of the problems in these local municipalities? Is it an issue of capacity? Is it an issue of cadre deployment? And what do you believe is the political appointees, do they necessarily have the capacity to be able to ensure that you manage these local institutions satisfactorily? And the reason why I say that, I know of mayors that can't even read and write. And what impact does that really have on these municipalities being able to become self-sufficient, particularly, and put measures in place to ensure that they improve revenue collection? I'll give you a good example. There are those that don't even know how to even read an integrated development plan. They have no financial management skills, and it's not a requirement to either be a mayor and thing. And we have found often that with the qualifications that we have, with the current standard of quality of education in the country, the looking for graduates is not necessarily the solution anymore. So I'd like you to comment on that, number one. Number two, I'll give you a good example on billing system. Where I used to be a councillor at Itegwini, at one stage we had spent about 500 million rand. And I can tell you the billing system was nowhere near ready. Up to this very day, 8 years later, I can tell you, I've got for the last 8 months, my bill is saying estimated, you know. There's very little or nothing happening. I'll give you another example. One of the solutions in terms of meters is prepaid meters. If you go to Itegwini, you sometimes have to wait for 2 years or 3 years for a prepaid meter. Yet it is a way of getting your revenue paid timely. And of course, as you alluded, it cuts down on your cost. Now, the other problem I want to talk about is, have you ever monitored and established whether there is a problem, or how are you monitoring the fact that, and I know, Chair, I sound like a stuck record when it talks about value for money. My understanding is a lot of the money at local government election levels are not spent appropriately, where you get items that cost 10 rand and you're spending 20 rand, 50 rand for the same items. And that is because of the interference of politicians and political parties. Did you find that as a problem in terms of, and I know that you were supposed to ensure some standardizing of prices and things like that. What do you believe is the cause of us not getting value for money at a local level? Or what is the obstacle in ensuring that we get value for money, which will result in you having more funds available to deliver services to our people on the ground? Now, I know my colleagues have spoken about consequence management. Consequence management is not within your mandate. It's not within the mandate of the Auditor General. But the responsibility, in my understanding, is us as politicians, because we are supposed to hold these officials and things accountable, but we can't if we are the ones that are putting them in these positions. What would your suggestion be, given the fact that you find we have a capacity problem? There is very little or no consequence management. Would you agree with me if I say that one of the solutions is allow independent panels having nothing to do with politicians to employ people at levels of issues and things? Thank you for the, I'll end the question there.
Thank you, Honorable Sheikh. Can I just check from the honorable members? Anybody else would like to come in? Other members are just struggling with the connectivity. But let me just check with the oral members who have spoken. Oral Sarupen, do you have something to add?
No, Chair, I'm covered. Thank you very much.
Okay. Oral Kaiso, are you back by any chance? Okay. Oral Tangwini, anything to add?
Chair, just a point of interest, we didn't get where's the leadership of National Treasury properly as well. So just that, because yesterday we were flogged by a whole nice delegation in the Department of Forestry and Fishery, and then today there's just no leadership. We didn't get where they are. So if we can also just get where's the leadership of National Treasury.
Thank you, Honorable Ntlangwini. The acting DG, I was told, is coming. It was reported here. He's in another committee. But the political leadership, that's what Honorable Ntlangwini is talking about. Do you have any apologies? Let's note that. Madi Jeng, we are leading this delegation as a DDG.
Sorry, Chairperson.
Yes.
The acting DG, yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, perfect. That's fine.
Morning, Chair and honourable members.
Hi, Momo. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. And sorry, okay. I'm late. I was in, as you explained, I was in the Standing Committee on Finance. So we're trying to go between a few committees today.
Okay, perfect. We did receive that apology at the beginning of the meeting. Just hold. We'll be asking you to come in a few minutes. DG, perhaps you may want to answer this one. The political leadership. We didn't receive any apology. I think that's what the oral members are raising. Would like to comment or to convey what the oral members are raising.
No, Chair. I mean, as you know, the political leadership does come when specifically requested. Normally, I mean, we come in a delegation unless you require the minister or the deputy minister, and they do attend. So I don't know the exact reason today, but Wednesday morning, as you know, I know the minister is at cabinet. So, and the deputy minister may or may not also be at cabinet. I can just check where he is. But yeah,
let's note that, honourable members. Honourable Sheikh Imam, you wanted to say something.
Sorry, Chair. I just thought of this. Can Treasury tell us what is the latest? If you remember, Chairperson, on the integrated financial management system at Treasury. We had a massive problem with millions of rands were even paid to people who did not even finish complete the job. Many of them, we found, were irregular payments, duplicate payments, and things like that. Could they tell us exactly what has happened to that investigation? Has there been any consequences? What is the latest in terms of that integrated financial management system at National Treasury? We've raised this before. We haven't received any answers. And if National Treasury, in my understanding, Chairperson, themselves are found wanting, then, of course, and you are the custodians of the funds, how are you going to expect local authorities to be able to do better than that? Thank you.
Honorable Sheikh, Imam, I just let you finish because I didn't want to interrupt you. It's a proverbial... putting the cart before the horse. I did say at the beginning that the acting DG, Mr. Momo, will be making a presentation around that, and then we'll have an opportunity to also interact with the presentation. Just hold on to your question, eh? Agreed? Okay. Thank you. Let me just say... Okay. Honorable Kaisa, are you back?
Yes, Chief, just one
question.
Okay. I think some of the issues here would have appreciated that there's a response from the political leadership. So my one other question is to find out from the Treasury, because a number of municipalities have been unable to pay the salaries or wages of workers. So I just want to understand to what an extent has this case happened across all the municipalities, and what remedial action that perhaps the Treasury has advised on to work on, because you would remember, if there's any non-payment of salaries of workers, you obviously looking for something that is, of a disruptive nature, at the production level. So I just want to know, to what an extent do you have a breakdown of this, all these municipalities, and what remedial action have you advised or to work on? Because it's obvious, those that are bankrupt are not going to see any day where they're going to be able to pay the workers. And that now you would expect a chaos in that particular situation. So I just want to know, has the Treasury put up some measures to intervene, timely in that situation, across the provinces? Because you can imagine a one province local municipalities being run down to non-functionality in as far as finances are concerned. You are looking for more troubles there. So what measures have been made to assist in that particular situation? I don't think necessarily the issue of cadre deployment comes in, because it's an issue of a policy matter of an organization. But rather, there are particular reasons which are there on daily basis, which are encountered, which are unable to, get them quite clearly, because of now we couldn't even read more into this report because of its late presentation nature. You see, it brings us a problem to ourselves. But I want to believe, Honorable Chair, at some stage we definitely have to find a way that we read this presentation and also get a chance either to, in the absence of the of sufficient response, we are able to reconvene, because it's very critical, the issue of local municipalities, because that is the central of where the constitution of the the country stresses that the government shall be that of the people, so where they have a voice. So now in this situation, that area is going to be tempered with, there's no sufficient intervention, because the people are at the central of good governance. So in the absence of or in the presence of these challenges, then we are bothering on an amber light. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Let's all mute honorable members and everybody who's on the platform except for the speaker. Let me just add to my question, and Madam Adjeng, welcome the presentation from you and Sadesh. Thank you very much. A few questions from my side. Well, let me start by making this comment. I hear a National Treasurer saying that they couldn't go out with the transversal contract because of issues at the Office of the Chief Procurement Office. So, and we are saying definitely that should be attended to, because as National Treasurer, we cannot be seen to be contributing to a lack of expenditure and improvement of services at whatever level, let alone at local government level. This is about getting revenue from as many people as possible. My angle would be, I just want to hear your comment on the ability of municipalities in general, but especially those which are in distress, and there are many of them, in attracting private sector investment into their municipalities. And from your side, what is it that they can do to try and make their municipalities attractive to private sector investments? We have got the 59% municipalities which are bankrupt and insolvent, but I saw that we are saying that we are focusing on the 43 municipalities which are in crisis. Shouldn't we be preventing, also focusing very much on these 151 municipalities which constitute 59%, to make sure that they don't fall into the red light, they're already in the red, that they don't become also define them as being in crisis, as they say, prevention is better than cure. When it comes to revenue management,
Logan Mpofu also raised with the committee.
Sorry, somebody is yes. Well, we find ourselves being in the wrong there are oral members who are in two meetings at the same time, not because of their likings, because of those committees sitting at the same time, just to explain the voice that we have just heard. I was saying my other comment or question is that I always hear us talking about training people, but they're already in this position. What is it that we can do to make sure that people who are appointed in this position, they don't need to be necessarily all of them CAs, but you find that basic financial management skills are lacking. What are we doing? Leave the politicians out, who are the councillors, right? But we have got officials who must be appointed into this position. What is the problem around that in us appointing the suitably qualified people, fit and proper people in these positions? What has been your experience, and from where you are seated, what can you do to improve that and make sure that everybody who appoints, make sure that people who are appointed in these positions are fit and proper? Because that's good for the country first and foremost. Because there are many grants, as you know, Mary Jane, which end up not being transferred to the municipalities, because municipalities can't do a simple things of compliance. And the end result of that is that the people who are supposed to receive services, they don't get those services, not because of their making, but because of officials who can't do their work, just to make sure that they also access the grant. We said a lot about municipalities owing ESCOM, and Honorable Sarupen even suggested the top slicing. I just wanted to check what is the position as we are talking at the moment, again, because it talks to revenue cash management. The government departments, how much do they owe municipalities? And is it possible to name and shame those departments, again name and shame the provinces which are owing, the SOEs and agencies. Because I think we should do that. It's well and good as national government to talk about these things, municipalities being dysfunctional, being insolvent, being cash strapped. But what is our contribution as the different spheres of government towards that position? I think I would leave it at that and allow Maddie Jane, Sadesh, the team to respond to the questions. Maddie Jane, back to you.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you very much for all these questions. And we want to apologize again for submitting the presentation late. We will truly make sure that we don't do that again. So if I may start with you, Honorable Buthelezi, on the question of what it would take for municipalities to attract the private sector. So what it would take municipalities is that they must be well governed and be able to deliver on the infrastructure services that are reliable and affordable. And that is the key thing. And we have seen, companies, seen in Zobotla, companies moving out of the municipality simply because of the services. So that is the basic that municipality can do, and which obviously as they get more into trouble, they're actually failing to do so. And I think that is a big concern for us, because that is quite critical for the economy to grow, for companies to be able to have access to services and to actually grow themselves and increase the investment. So why are we not? What are we doing to prevent the municipalities that are that we are saying they are already in the red and maybe can go deeper? So what we are saying is that for those municipalities, as you see the iceberg, things get worse and worse, that we need to get them to do the right things in the correct way. And this always really start with how they prepare their budget. So once the municipality prepares and table unfunded budget, it actually means that it is planning to spend more money than it actually has. And by the way, the problem is not necessarily, the CFOs and the MM, because I think sometimes often there is pressure by the councils to actually want to show that they can deliver more than they actually are able to do so, which is a political thing. And when the council receives the report, when they receive the budget to table, there is always a report that comes either from Treasury for non-delegated municipalities, or that comes from the provincial Treasury for delegated municipalities. That will indicate the status of that municipality. So I'm responding to this issue of why MMs they should actually be held responsible necessarily. So they actually know that the council, it's not like the information is hidden, but it's the choice and the decision that they actually take given the powers that they have. So now if we have the councils that are doing that, and we are not also able to contain the costs, because I mean in the national government and provinces we are working very hard to cut down on spending if you don't have the money, but in the local government it's almost like it is their right to actually spend the money that they don't have at all times, while on the other hand you see the bloated structures. Sometimes they are being paid above the level in which the municipality is rated. This is what we are seeing in Mukijima. And they are allowing for themselves to have increases in a lot of mismanagement just when it comes to personnel. And I think that is the major issue, that we are paying a lot for personnel in terms of the wage bill, but we're actually not paying for the right kind of skills. Why? Because the councils have got lots of powers. And I think for me, when we talk about what is the root cause of the problem, the root cause, it comes from the fact that the structure and the system of local government has bestowed huge amounts of powers on the councils that are meant to be very close to the people, to be able to have the objective of actually taking decisions over the administration that will best serve the people that have appointed them. So they've got power. They've got powers to decide who they appoint and to populate the administration. And what we are finding in municipalities is that each time they come with their own teams. And then you have got the system just getting more and more bloated with huge amount of salaries that municipalities can actually pay. And the reason why they were allowed to pay the salaries that they could pay is because they are meant to run the council like a business. That the municipality, you sell the services, you collect the revenue, and then you do that. Now, what is very clear now is that because they don't do that, they can't afford the structure of the costs that actually have been allowed to actually, you know, be in place. And the root cause for me is the proximity. The councils, they are not doing what they are supposed to do. There is a lot of political instability. There is dysfunctionality. They actually don't do what they are supposed to do. And often, sometimes, councils don't even do the work. They don't sit, but they are still putting the salaries. So I do think the problems start there, to realize that actually the assumption that the councils will be interested in serving the people and therefore will be key in determining the administration is actually not holding. So we need to be able to say, how do we then professionalize this administration so that you de-link the administration from actually the influence of the council and the decisions and charges of it. Right now, we can't even appoint a municipal manager in some of these municipalities simply because council has got to constitute the panel. They've got to decide who. And then they're already wanting their own person. So it's not about that we are going to appoint somebody who is competent and who can run the municipality like a business. So I think for me that the root cause is there. And as long as we have that, it doesn't really matter. The coalition politics have even made things more worse because you have got a coalition of people that perhaps all of them care for themselves and not care for the people. Hence, they will be fighting amongst themselves and then not caring whether the services are happening and not taking the decisions that are supposed to help the municipality to deliver the services. So I think for me, that's the two, the council powers and also professionalizing the administration. So that's what we are beginning to see. Without that, we are fighting a losing battle, because even where we are intervening in these municipalities, when the council is still there, the powers that they still have still bestows upon them to take decisions. And sometimes they don't even take those decisions. There's delays and things are not happening in the speed with which they should be. So even that, which is where we are saying, when you intervene, you are actually handholding them, because we put the teams there, but we are not able to move at speed to help this minister to turn around, because we are hindered by the powers that the council have that are still managing the administration. And the fact that to dissolve the council that is not dysfunctional, even though the law allows us to do so, is a political decision that is very difficult to happen. Right. Northwest have just decided to deal with this, but how long has it been there being run by two councils, two mayors, two MMs, two CFOs, you know, and just the municipality is just in a state of paralysis, simply because of politics, of factions that are ruling there, that impact on the people. And then we are also very slow in dealing with those issues. So I think for me that is foundational, that is fundamental. So on the issue of debt.
As you finish, you deal with that one. Please just tell me the legal status of adopting unfunded budget. Is it not illegal? That's one. Or what should be done about it? Because it looks like it's prevalent everywhere. Continue, please.
Yes, yes. So unfunded budget is illegal. So it becomes illegal because Section 18 of the MFMA demands that the budget must be funded. You know, so that is why we assess it and we advise them into the council, and the council should not be taking unfunded budget. You know, so obviously the consequences have to run into you are doing all those things. But as long as we are hindered in terms of the policies that come into being, it becomes very difficult to deal with these issues in the way that we should deal with them, at least from where I sit as a technocrat. So so in terms of ESCOM, the debt that owes, so I think we must also realize that the municipalities are not only owing ESCOM, and obviously ESCOM is an issue. But when you look at that slide number 3, in the water board, some of them are going out of business because of the debt that municipalities are owing. And the solution to say, can we cut, can we top slice? that also is not a solution, because the people that are supposed to pay are the people that are not supposed to be subsidized, because the equitable share is meant to subsidize the poor that are not paying. So now what we are seeing here is that because municipalities are underperforming, they are not collecting, so they end up having to pay from equitable share even for those that should actually be paying. So now equitable share, if you say you're going to top slice, you'll take all of it. You know, and what we are seeing here, because of the challenges that municipalities are faced with, some of them, as Honourable Member has indicated, they can't even pay salaries because they're not collecting, they're not working, right? The officials are not working. So what is happening is this equitable share, instead of going to pay for basic services, these municipalities will be waiting for the installment so that they can pay salaries. And for me, that is the problem. And it's a problem that you cannot solve by saying you're going to add more money, you know, because we need to be able to get the municipalities to function in the way they should. And if they are not doing that, I don't see where the problem will come from, because if we say the services should not be paid for, somebody else has to be taxed, you know, to be able to pay for those services that people should not be paying for if we go to that solution. So I think for me, it's still about getting the system of local government to work in the way that it should work, or to actually begin to look at how are you cutting down on the costs, you know, so that you're able to align your spending, your costs, your spending with the revenue that you actually have. So how do we, suggestions, I've done that. Yes, so on the issue that I think I've already answered some of the issues that Honorable Sheikh has raised. So maybe I can touch on Honorable Peters, who would want the breakdown of municipalities. We can provide that information. The consequences of CFO, I think I've responded to that one. Sadesh will respond to the economic profiles and the billing systems. Are we part of the team? Yes, we are part of the team. And indeed, part of what we are doing, even through our municipal support, municipal improvement program, we actually are hand-holding these municipalities. But as long as we are hindered by these governance issues, those things are not yielding the results that we could generate if it was not because of that. And we are part of the teams that inducted this municipality. And in fact, this year, we developed a very specific, beyond the induction course that is done in collaboration with SALGA, that covers everything that the municipality has to do, has to deal with in terms of the legislation that govern municipalities, from Systems Act, Structures Act, MFMA, and all that. We also designed a course to induct the municipalities that are in crisis, the 43. That then explains to them where they are and the challenge that they are faced with, what they need to do, and what intervention would help them to do. But what is also their responsibility to make sure that the municipalities actually recovers, even though they were not part of the problem that caused the municipality, that it is their responsibility. So we've been rolling out that induction, which I think was found to be quite helpful in actually making it very clear to them what the issues are that they are faced with. Are we coordinating with COCTA? So this is Honorable Honorable Peters, I think I haven't finished. No, I think I finished some of those. Sadesh will cover them. Are we coordinating with COCTA and PTs in the program? Yes, indeed. In fact, as a treasury family, we do have a strategy that we have agreed on that is centered around 6 game changers that include this revenue function to see how we are dealing with revenue. And we have got a committee, a revenue coordination committee that brings together COCTA and other stakeholders like SALGA and stuff at the national level. And we're rolling out that even at the provincial level to ensure that we have got that coordination and alignment. And the initiative that we are driving now are actually being worked through with the provinces, with the provincial treasuries in the process. So that I think the coordination there is quite strong. I've responded to why municipalities are not. Sadesh can actually add more on what have we found out, because we have done an assessment in detailed one with the 43 municipalities to see what is actually the problem with the revenue function. So Sadesh, can you add? Let me see if there's anything else that I've left. Can you add on some of those things that I said you could add, or anything that you think I've left that you want to add on?
Thanks, Ma'am Alijeng. Chair, with your permission. yes, so. Thanks. So on the viability studies, the economic and financial viability studies, yes, we had undertaken the studies in 4 provinces, in the local municipalities in those 4 provinces. But those studies were static at a certain point in time. So what we intend doing now for the remaining provinces, the 5, is that we want to develop a tool that can be updated on a regular basis to assist municipalities during understanding the economic base and converting that economic base into potential revenue for municipalities. So that is part of the intended program going forward. I have touched on it on slide number 9, just to contextualize that. On the billing system, Chair, we need to also contextualize, is it the billing system that's problematic? Or is it the processes leading or feeding the billing system that's causing the problem? And in our experience, it is all of the processes leading to the billing system. And here we're talking about, as an example, the correct meter reading, the correct capturing of customer information into the billing system, the verification of the general valuation roll to the billing system, where we found that many properties that are on the valuation roll are not on the billing system. So it's not the billing system per se. It is some of the processes leading to the billing system that are problematic in the space. So I think the billing system is just a conduit. It's just a tool, but the processes around that need to be strengthened to improve revenue collection. The 43 municipalities, and what we have found in the 43 municipalities where we have undertaken the assessment, we found that municipalities are not generating sufficient cash. So they're not collecting as per the law. Right, and I've alluded to on the third slide that 255 billion is owed to municipalities. Now, had the municipalities collected half of that, I think the problem would be solved around funding in municipalities. But municipalities are just not implementing the credit control and debt collection policies adequately to collect what is due to them, and that is why they find themselves owing the ESCOM, owing the water boards, and then you get the tariffs that probably not cost reflective. So they're always on the back foot, owing the bulk suppliers, that is ESCOM and water boards. So the problem around revenue in these 43 municipalities is that we need to look at the revenue value chain and identify what is the root cause of the non-collection in these municipalities. Is it the processes within these municipalities that are flawed, or is it the capacity to collect what's due? Is it the profiling on customers? Because many municipalities chase after customers only to realize after spending large amounts of money to collect that these customers are indigent and they can't get anything out of these customers. So that is why in our intended program, we set the link to the SARS office, the link to the Home Affairs and SASA to better profile these customers will assist municipalities ultimately to determine whether the customer is in a position to pay their bill or not. Memel Jeng, you have touched on the reports that we can share around the 155, the breakdown of the 155 and the 98 unfunded budget positions. So what are we doing for the next budget? Now, we have institutionalized, and I think Memel Jeng has also touched on this, we have institutionalized the benchmark process, the mid-year process. We've got an adequate early warning system in place that's not consulted on timelessly to determine whether the municipality is in crisis or not. We've got the revenue initiatives that I've touched on in the presentation to assist with municipalities' revenue collection and the initiatives around that. I'm not sure if there's any other question that hasn't been touched on. The collaboration with COCTA and PTs, Memel Jeng touched on it, but because revenue management covers the Municipal Systems Act, which is the mandate of COCTA, and the MFMA, which is the mandate of National Treasury, you'll find there's an overlap in the two pieces of legislation. And we always work together to try and resolve some of the issues in municipalities, to the point that we have decided that when we go into a municipality, we don't go as a department, we go as government, National Treasury, SALGA, COCTA, so that we don't confuse the municipality ultimately on some of the initiatives and support we want to provide to these municipalities. Let me stop there, Memel Jeng. Thank you. And Chair.
Okay. So maybe if I can add on, I know Honorable Kelly has asked a question about the appointments in the positions. I mean, I said a little bit about that, but you said with regard to financial management skills. So what I want to say here is that we have been running for a number of years now a grant called Financial Management Grant, which is actually enabling municipalities to take on this newly qualified young people as interns with the view of actually being able to absorb them into positions. So, and I think if they were doing things right, we should not be actually be talking about bloated, budget and treasury units of the municipalities. Now, so some of this, come through and maybe you walk out of the municipality because the preference is maybe with other different people that needs to be funded. That's what they want to appoint. But that provides quite a wonderful opportunity for actually populating the structures with the right people. And, in order to ensure the right people also, the provinces have got a lot of powers also to be able to say yeah or no in terms of the competences. And I think that is where also the gap becomes, because they do allow the wrong CFOs to be appointed, the wrong manager to be appointed, when actually there is a competencies framework that they can actually say no, because they do have to have some kind of concurrence in their appointments. So in terms of the government debt, obviously it is a concern, and I think there has been a lot that has been communicated to departments to get them to pay. So, but what is always strange with municipalities is that when it comes to government debt and businesses, they don't robustly implement credit policies like they do for an individual, you know, because in my view, we're all consumers. Whether I'm an individual, they will come and switch off, you know. So we have been saying it's going to be very difficult for us to be debt collectors, you know, to get government to pay each other. That each one of these needs to do what is right. Obviously, with ESCOM, the issues are so deep now that, you know, there is a need for some kind of support for these municipalities to be able to do what they are supposed to do. But municipalities themselves should actually be implementing credit control, even to departments that are actually not paying. Nothing stops them from doing that, you know. So that's the point that I wanted to raise on that one. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mary Jane and Fadesh. I think as you can see, this is a very a difficult area for all of us. And if it doesn't work, the whole government doesn't work, because there's no place called province or national. All of us reside in municipalities and localities. But thank you very much for the, we hope there's going to be improvement in the expenditure, because you remember, Madi Jengbi, what started this is that we wanted to follow up on the underspending mainly for municipal revenue management improvement program. So let's attempt to do that, so that we are not part of the equation of making municipalities not to work. But thank you very much. Mr. Chair,
may I come in? I wanted to just make a comment or two.
Okay, please do that.
You know, I think. You know, certainly having been responsible for revenue and with SARS, I mean, I think also how municipalities collect their funds, the question of billing, I think, you know, we should consider maybe learning lessons from SARS and other mechanisms. But the other thing is, for some reason, we also leave out you know, what happens in normal businesses. Like, why don't municipalities be compelled to also report people who don't pay them their accounts to credit bureaus? You know, those are pretty powerful mechanisms to force people to pay. And frankly, when, you know, if you don't want excess lending, even from a financial sector point of view, you want to know what somebody is also owing to ESCOM or to their municipality. So I think we should also consider using the mechanisms that are used in the private sector to deal with it. The second point I wanted to note, you know, a lot of the problems in municipalities are really political. I think the question about what type of municipal managers are chosen, you get to the National Development Plan, and it's about what it called the political administrative interface. That unless we're going to have a professional public service and professional municipal managers, we're not going to solve this problem. If every time there's a new mayor and they want to bring their own officials from their own party, I think that this area gets politicized, there's no continuity. And municipal managers behave like politicians. They don't behave like municipal managers. So aside from competence, I think continuity and professionalization is also critical. And if we don't do that, honestly, we're never going to pick up the problem. Lastly, let me make the point, and this is a problem. You know, when you have more than, I would say, 10 municipalities in trouble, then it's a systemic crisis. No treasury, whether in a province or national. Now, I always say to people, national treasury is not God. We cannot do the work that municipalities are supposed to do. We don't keep an army of people just to be employed in case 50 municipalities are in trouble. In fact, if we had such people, then they shouldn't even be at the Treasury. They should be in those very municipalities. And so, you know, you've got to have, even where councils understand their role of political oversight, but also the limits to their roles. And if it don't solve those problems, I think it's going to be difficult. And if you have abilities in trouble, it's a systemic problem that applies to both politicians and to officials. And if we don't get to the political admin interface, my view, we'll never solve these problems in any proper way. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Momo. Thank you for that input. As I've said, Maddie Jane and her team, thank you. Momo,
Chair?
I think yes, ma'am.
No, I just want to drop in on what Mr. Momo have said. No, we need to reject the proposal of putting people on that blacklisting system that is just gonna eat anyway the money, and the money won't go to municipalities. Because how do you gonna put a woman on a blacklisting system that her only income is a grant by the end of the day and it's not working? And those systems are normally increasing on interest and all of that. So we can't accept proposals like that. It's a proposal that it's really not gonna serve for our rural communities that are struggling to make ends meet, that can't even buy a loaf of bread by the end of the day. So I'll just like to raise my objection to that. Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Tlangeni, let's note that. Perhaps my reaction would be we anybody is, yeah. No, I wanted to say that we can't get a one-size-fits-all. We have got instances here where businesses are not paying municipalities and are using all the services and so on. So it's an issue which I think perhaps we must interrogate and debate. The departments, there are departments here who don't pay, but this committee sits year in, year out and allocates budget for these particular things, but that budget gets used for something else, and we come and blame municipalities. I'm not for a second suggesting that they are not to blame, there are many things, but I think national government and provincial government, SOEs and business, they are also part of the equation. But at the end of the day, municipalities, the billing system, it's something which has wreaked havoc, even for those consumers and customers who would like to pay. But with those comments, may I allow Momo to come in? We had asked him to come and brief us, the department, about IFMS. Honorable Sheikh had started talking about it. This seems to be a never-ending story when it comes to wasteful and fruitless expenditure. You see IFMS coming up again and so on. Momo, let's see what's happening. Please take the committee through. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you for the opportunity to talk on IFMS. It's something that I think I really welcome, because if there's anything anywhere that has impacted on the reputation of the National Treasury, it's the IFMS system. And let me say for the record, Chair, I've never really been involved with the IFMS. So I've taken a lot of time to find out about the IFMS system. And let me start by saying that, you know, the IFMS system is something that is absolutely necessary for government. And the primary objective is to modernize and automate the financial management systems in order to support the implementation and requirements of the PFMA. At the moment, it's for national and provincial governments. But if you don't have such a system, there is no way you can modernize procurement. There is no way you can modernize your leave system, allow the basic education department to know which teachers are present or absent. And the systems we have for Purcell and BASS, when even I joined the Treasury, and I should add, I have clocked the magic age of 65. I joined in 1995, post-apartheid, just to be clear, that when we came into government, there was Purcell and BASS. And at that time, there was a crisis that you couldn't continue with Purcell and BASS because they were not designed for those. They had outgrown their usefulness, and they needed to be modernized. And 10 years or 20 years, that time I remember, and as we were discussing, even with the old regime, as we were preparing for power, they were saying to us that, you know, the best way to do this is to get, at that time the fashion was go to India, they're very good in software development, or sorry, not software, in computer programming, and you get a custom-made system. And actually for 20 years from 1994 and even before, right up to 2014, that's what we were trying to do. And then we gave up. We realized this thing is too complex. And we made the good and bold decision that we should buy what's called a customer off-the-shelf system. And this was taken to cabinet. And in my view, there was a proper process done to award the contract by the end of 2016. I should add that Purcell and BASS are still with us today because of the problems we faced. And I will say it was the launch by the Guptas of an attack in terms of state capture on the Treasury in May 2017, when they leaked and selectively leaked, by the way, an internal audit unit report, okay? And basically, if you take Purcell, it uses, I understand, a language called natural, which nobody, you wouldn't hear of today. You don't find people who practice on natural, on COBOL, on BASS. So even when we keep the systems today, we have to get people who have to learn that language to be able to continue with it. So it's not like there's a ready supply of service providers to continue with Purcell and BASS. So really, we can't go back and say, leave out IFMS and let's have Purcell and BASS. It's just not possible. And given that we as Treasury, we understand, we want to be cleaner than clean. We want to be more Catholic than the Pope, okay? So it doesn't matter who's making any allegations. We want an investigation there because our reputation as a Treasury matters. But I should, so whether it comes from the Guptas or whoever, whether it's malicious or not, we still want to know that, we we are operating in as clean a manner as possible and at a higher level than what's expected of anybody else. And as a result of that attack, a number of investigations were launched. And I should say many, many hardworking Treasury officials were defamed in the process. Some of them have passed away, but it was a shameful chapter in how some people were named by the Gupta media and with lies, I should say. But anyway, we are sturdy people in the Treasury. And, you know, there's no doubt that the attack was the one Gupta attack that succeeded in that the IFMS system really became...
Momo? Hello? Can you hear me? Momo? Momo?
Yes.
Momo?
We are being abused here.
Yeah. Is it me or Momo has just disappeared?
Yes.
Momo, can you hear me?
Yes.
Please switch off your video.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay.
I can hear you now. I wanted to say.
Okay, Momo. Apologies, Chair. I'm a victim of load shedding at the moment.
Okay.
For some reason, quite a long time. Okay. So what I was saying is, to look at the IFMS system. Yeah.
Momo, I wanted to make an intervention. Let's leave the political frills around this thing and so on, and all these things. What prompted these things? That IFMS came up when there was a report to the committee that's where you are getting your wasteful and fruitless expenditure and so on. So let's focus on that. Let's be very careful about a very political statements, because I don't want to open this meeting for that. Let's focus on the economic of this thing.
Yes, Chair. I'm doing that, Chair. I was just presenting. So
please.
The next two slides, I think the next few points just provide the context.
And honorable members, can you please and everyone else
on implement, because they are quite linked. If I may continue, Chair. Chair, can you hear me?
Yes, continue. Yes.
Okay. So basically, look, the Treasury has been undergoing several investigations. Firstly, from, we had forensic investigations. The Hawks, the SIU are currently conducting their own investigation. The public protector, and we were called up by the State Capture Commission, and Treasury filed affidavits on all of those. We were a bit disappointed that the State Capture Commission did not really, they made no comment on IFMS, despite taking this. So let me say, to this date, the Treasury has not heard any evidence being pointed that anything was done inappropriately, any money was spent. I heard, I think, was it Honorable Imam earlier saying that there were duplicate payments and so on. We have not had any such evidence, and yes, the forensic investigations did reveal a few minor lapses, and there's been appropriate disciplinary warning letters issued, but we've not been provided with any evidence of any mismanagement or theft or anything inappropriate. Some of the investigations are still continuing. I think our only sort of issue is that these investigations are taking a long time, and we'll wait and see whether they reveal anything. But to the extent that they We're still waiting. The problem is it's paralyzing this project. The other factors that have caused problems are more technical, that there's an MOU that we have partner departments. And just to make it clear, when you look at IFMS, we have a steering committee made up of the Treasury, the Department of Public Service and Administration, and CETA. But the two departments are the Public Service Department and ourselves. And at the moment, one of the parties has not signed the MOU, something which is coming up even in the audit issues. And despite three attempts to get procurement, because to complete the IFMS project, to implement it, we need to procure through CETA, and we've had three attempts at doing it, and this has failed. So in a sense, this is a problem of this project, that the Treasury is not solely in charge. If we were solely in charge, we could still try and make things work, but the law says we've got to work through CETA. And if they don't deliver, then frankly, we can't deliver. And that leads to what the AGC sees as fruitless expenditure. So it's kind of self-reinforcing. So Chair, let me just make the point that as far as Treasury is concerned, we've got no choice but to implement the IFMS system and the contract we have with Oracle so we can modernize the financial management system and actually get the kind of information that Parliament and everybody asks of us. Next slide, please. So if you look at the next slide, Chair, we also want to point out, just on the matter of fruitless expenditure, that we've consistently differed with the AG on how they are interpreting the PFMA, and there is a formal dispute with the AG with regard to whether when we spend in line with contractual expenditure, whether it can be regarded as fruitless and wasteful, even though we accept that because of the implementation problem, that we're certainly not getting as much value for money as we should. And this has been the case at one audit after another. And it appears that no matter what we do, if we continue on the contract, it keeps on being regarded as fruitless no matter what we do. And this is what we're trying to clarify the approach with the AG, because this over-focus, I think, on compliance, by the way, it's a more general issue we have. It's not related to our own issue. It's quite different from conventional financial auditing. And the focus is on irregular and fruitless expenditure rather than on corruption or suspicious transactions. And there's no differentiation between rule transactions and contractual obligations versus something that's really bad like corruption or inappropriate payments and so on. And I should add that this kind of approach, and I've said this more publicly in different forums, that it's driving risk averseness and undermines, in fact, the very approach of the PFMA, which is to let managers manage but hold them accountable. I mean, this is certainly something, I have been involved with the drafting of the PFMA. And I always say that the way the PFMA was interpreted and audited in the first 10 years was in line with the spirit. But the last 10 years, this has changed. But let me not deal with those issues. I'll deal with the contract itself. So the National Treasury strongly believes that we as government must honor all our contractual commitments. And so we are obliged to pay for technical support and maintenance, which is in line with the Oracle Master Agreement. And in a sense, what the implication of what the AG is saying to us is to stop making that payment. And that itself will constitute a technical breach of contract, something that we think we shouldn't be doing. And two, it will lead
to even more expenditure for the state in a way of penalties. And maybe I'll ask Tikaledi, or if you want to go through it, or Laura, do you want to just spell out what the contract says in the rest of the slide, penalties that we would face. So in a sense, it's damn if we do, damn if we don't. Carry on, Laura or Tikaledi.
Thank you so much, Mama. So, good morning, again, Honorable Chair. The essence for us is that the technical support and maintenance, in the absence of having that, it will mean that we would roll out an out-of-date Oracle system, which will leave us extremely at risk and vulnerable, because we would not have the latest version, but most importantly, we would not have the required security patches in our software. And I'm sure the committee is well aware of the significant risk that not having a security in place would leave government if we rolled this system out to all of government. But equally, the majority of the departments would not accept out-of-date versions of programs. In terms of cost savings, if we were not to have the support and maintenance, we would forfeit our preferential 17% rate as opposed to the normal 22% rate of the net license fee as a cost for support and maintenance. But more importantly, we would also forfeit our discount support fee in terms of the annual increases. Just to emphasize to the committee, we do not pay money on licenses. It was a once-off payment in 2016. What we're paying for annually is the required support and maintenance. And we would then have forfeited our discount. And the discount for the state is significant. It's a 0% increase on our annual fee for support and maintenance for the first to fourth renewable years. And then from the fifth to the ninth renewable year, there can be no more than a 1% increase, and 10 to 19 is a limit of no more than a 5% increase. So effectively, not only did we make a saving on the actual purchase, but we ensured that savings are inherent in the contract. But most importantly, we would incur penalties, if we had not taken up support and maintenance from the onset of this contract, and if we should stop the support and maintenance during the course of the contract. Now, as the committee will know, penalties in itself are wasteful. We would have to pay a reinstatement. Were we to stop the contract for support and maintenance, at the point where we needed to reactivate it, which we would need to do in order to ensure our versions were the latest and we had the security badges, we would immediately incur 150% penalty on the net support fee when we require support. The reinstatement fee would be prorated back to the date of lapse, so we would pay for it anyway. But equally, if we had not procured support and maintenance at the inception of the licenses, at the point where we needed support, we would need to pay the fee backdated to the date when we purchased the license. Thank you very much, Mama. I'll hand back to you.
Okay, let's get to the next slide. I think you should just go through that as well.
Tani?
Tikaledi, or you?
Thank you so much, Momo. Tikaledi will certainly come in as well. In terms of where we are in the progress status of IFMS, obviously, as the committee knows, software licenses were procured. We completed the policy gap analysis in phase. We are currently in the pilot site implementation phase. The critical milestone for us is that we have to procure a service provider in order to allow us to do the implementation of the pilot site. all of our other milestones are dependent on this procurement. As the committee will know, a national treasury, in terms of legislation, must do this procurement through CETA. Unfortunately, we have been attempting, CETA has been attempting to procure the service provider since 2018-19, and in fact has attempted three times unsuccessfully. The third and most recent unsuccessful procurement was embarked on 21-22. National Treasury did everything possible in order to accelerate that support for CETA to do the procurement process. However, again, it did not result in a successful appointment due to the fact that the quoted bid price far exceeded the budgeted amount. And therefore, it was not possible for Treasury to agree to the outcome of that procurement process. And unfortunately, despite Treasury doing all that we needed to do, CETA was not successful. And therefore, preparations are now underway to initiate another procurement process, including the considerations of Treasury conducting this procurement ourselves. In terms of the national rollout, in 2018...
No, carry on, sorry.
In terms of the national rollout, in 2018, a procurement process for the establishment of a panel through CETA was again not successful. And therefore we are now in the process of establishing that panel. But it is important to note that Treasury is taking all steps in order to accelerate the implementation of IFMS and has committed that we will have IFMS rolled out nationally in 2024 as we have planned. Thank you, Mama.
Okay, so Chair, Dikaledi, do you want to say anything before I conclude?
No, thank you, DG. I'm covered for now. Thank you.
Okay. DG, Dikaledi is head of our IFMS project. So, honorable members and Chair, just to conclude, so despite whatever dispute we have, and we highly respect the office of the AG, I think they too agree that there's a need to implement IFMS. And I think we felt that, you know, if other departments are not cooperating or CETA keeps on failing, we are exploring taking over this by ourselves. It does mean that we have to ask CETA for approval to be exempt from their provision, but honestly, it's just not helping us that we are dependent on others, and this leads to fruitless expenditure for us and not for any of the other departments who don't do anything. It's an issue that we're taking up. We are also in the process of, just with the AG, there was a process where it was also then referred to as a multiple irregularity, and they've referred it to the SIU. So, and there too, we are kind of challenging the AG on the approach that they've taken, because we think it leads to paralyzing the project even further, even as they support us in implementing IFMS. We've started as per what they've also suggesting, I think, but certainly at our own initiative, further discussions with Oracle, because we now have, I don't have to say to honorable members, what you buy in 2016, now in 2022, you know, there's certainly the system's been modernized even more. And so we've got to, as we move to implement it fully, to actually try and update within the contract that we have, look at the more modern options that are there. And that includes, for example, that, not that I understand all these issues, but that you move away from on-premise approaches to that on the iCloud. The IFMS will, we think, still is very important, especially as we have the, as we want to modernize the procurement system. And if you look at the State Capture Commission, they devoted quite a chapter to public procurement and the reforms and the monitoring that you need to prevent corruption in government of the sort that we saw took place. And of course, will enable better management of staff and resources. So our only request, I think, to all these investigative processes is that they conclude their work as soon as possible. It's been going on for too long. And also extend it on things like, you know, who facilitate the leak in the first place, because it really undermines the system of internal controls. If an accounting officer can't, if the perspective on internal audit reports make it to the front page of Sunday Times, then people are not going to speak truth to power. Remember, when the internal audit process is quite a critical tool for a manager, for an accounting officer to fix up problems as they occur. There's always going to be problems. And Chair, so that's our approach on IFMS. And I think I want to leave you with a thought, which I think is recommendation 68 from the State Capture Commission, which basically says, if accounting authorities and officials act in good faith, it's important not to criminalize such actions, because otherwise, and I'm extending what's been said, I think why they're saying it, is it does lead to paralyzing projects like we have on IFMS. So I thought the broader context is important, but also to make the point, if there is anything inappropriate that was done, if anybody has stolen money, if through these investigative processes that comes through, you know, we'd like to know, and I promise you we'll act very brutally if anybody has acted inappropriately and in bad faith over IFMS. But at the moment, we sit with a dilemma that we need to implement, but we need the other parties in government to also come to the party, and two, the AG to recognize that when we are enforcing, when we are implementing the contract, it can't really be regarded as irregular or fruitless. I think it's a problem area that we are sort of engaging with the AG. So, Chair, I'll stop there. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Acting DG Momo. Oral members, here's the presentation. Can I have indications of the oral members who would like to interact with the presentation? Oral members?
Kaiso.
Honorable Kaiso.
Yes, Chair.
No, you know how we do it, Robert Kaiser. I want to get indication of other members. Who's next? Honorable members, I've got Robert Kaiser. Who's next? Is it only Honorable Kaiser would have a question or a comment on IFMS? Okay. Honorable Kaiso, please start.
Yes, thank you very much, Chair. Chair, perhaps let me start here that I've heard Mr. Muller trying to stand on the political side that perhaps it is best for Treasury to stand aside on that particular posture of playing politics or politics. So it's going to be a big shoe for you, Treasury. So because what we wanted to get here as a committee is to get into these administrative areas where Treasury, you are involved directly as Treasury. So now playing the hide and seek behind, you know, political postures is not going to assist us to get through what we want to go to and resolve the big challenges that we are referring to here. So I just want to understand, for instance, when we say there's been an ongoing issue of, you know, passing budgets without a availability, passing a vote without actually having a budget, what does that imply? And we have been observing this for quite a long time. And then you are also narrating this thing has been ongoing. So we ask whether this thing, is it unlawful? And obviously it does tell you that now this is unlawful. So this unlawfulness, how did the Treasury address this unlawfulness? Because remember, when you're passing a budget, you are committing the whole Republic of South Africa of service delivery under that unit. And then it doesn't happen. And it's nowhere in the law that provides that there should be you make a budget, you commit an institution which does not have a budget to a budget, which is non-existent. So, you know, the consequences thereof should be very great. So it won't assist us to say it has been an ongoing thing that we have been observed, you know, from the Treasury point of view, and then try to politic around it. So it's not going to assist us. So there must be a solution, urgently. So if there's a gap in terms of the legislature, perhaps from the committee point of view, we then have to look at that, so that is being put to stop, that nobody can now move to pass a budget willy-nilly like that, you know, where it commits the institution which does not have a budget to a budget. It has to stop immediately. So if there's a gap in terms of legislation, perhaps as a committee we need to look at that and then make sure that we put an immediate stop on that. And secondly, is on the issue of which has been raised, which has been said to be a dispute, you know, because we can't have an ongoing called a dispute between the Office of the Auditor General and Treasury on a particular matter. Because obviously the two institutes are being governed by particular pieces of legislation. So it must be a matter of, there must be a substantive matter which has been raised by Auditor General or at the Treasury that this is a matter. So in the absence of that, there shouldn't be a dispute. So I'm not sure which substantive matter are you expanding on, Treasury. If you can clarify that, perhaps I'll be put on a comfort position. But in the absence of any clarification in terms of the two piece of legislation which govern the two units, then it doesn't hold, any dispute doesn't hold. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kaiso, Honorable Tlamin.
Thank you very much, Chair. I fully agree with the Honorable Kaiso. I mean, we have been sitting with this problem with National Treasury for far too long. And for a body that is supposed to be the custodian of the country's funds, they are not moving swiftly to sort out the fruitless and wasteful expenditure and the underspending that they are having because of this problem. I mean, to blame the Guptas, they have gone and go. We can't be having that story for the longest time. It's there, it's done. Now we need to solve and have a solution to the problem. And then if we're gonna forever have
a body that is going to come and be more political than they actually needs to be, is going to create problems, Chair. They must focus on what they need to do within the department and leave the other stuff, politics, for us. And I think maybe for Mr. Momo, that have been here since 1994, it's actually a disgrace for him to leave a department like this that are having underspending in such a nature. We can't have a treasury that are so proudly stopping, blocking other budgets of other departments for underspending, and then they can't do the same for their discretions. So they really need to come to the party with that. Thank you, Chair.
thank you, Honorable Tlangwini. Do I have any other honorable member who would like to come in? No. Let me come in with my questions, let me thank the acting DG Momo and the team for their presentation. And as I said, that what prompted this discussion was the presentation by National Treasury on the fourth expenditure of all departments and what transpired after that. Let's focus on that and leave the frills out. Perhaps let me share this anecdotal story of a student who wrote a literature book. And the true story. And then he went to the university, and then he was a student, and that book became a set work. So the lecturer asked in one of the tests or exams, what did the writer mean when he said 1, 2, 3, and what was going through his mind when he said this? So for the student, it was a very easy thing because he knew very well what he was going through and why he wrote in a particular way. Long story short, the lecturer failed him. The lecturer at that stage was not aware that he was talking to the writer. He read the book which was there and interpreted it. What's the moral of the story? The moral of the story is about the dispute that you are having with the AG's office about PFMA, and you are correctly saying that you are part of the orders of PFMA. So unfortunately, you can't always be there to interpret what was the intention. The AG and the users of that act will always interpret what they see there. So I think I'm covering the part where you're talking about the dispute that we are having with the AG. And let me say, it definitely would be unfair to expect the committee to do anything around that, like we do with all other departments and other ODTs of the AG. We rely as an economic agent on what the AG has written, and we respond to that. I hear there are all these different interpretations, and the mortal beings that we are, we definitely can't get involved in that. I think it should be resolved between and amongst yourselves. This also talks about the involvement of more than one department in this IFMS project. Again, we as this committee playing our oversight, we can't be involved in that. This is an executive area. Can you please resolve it at your level? From where we are seated, we'll always, as the economic agents and users of audited financial statements, rely on what the Chapter 9 institution gives to us. And again, we hear what we are trying to resolve. Please, guys, resolve it. Let us not be drawn, because with the best of intentions, we can't be in a position to resolve this. If the legislation which must be amended so that something is clear and so on,
so be it. But it resides in your purview, not with us. Surely you agree with us that if we were to start getting, we'll open a can of worms where all these ODTs will come and try to explain to Parliament that disagreement with the AG, and that will be the end of us as Parliament relying on the AG's report and so on. So again, let it be resolved there. As it stands before us, it's wasteful and fruitless expenditure. That's what it is. Now, yes, the question: can we get the original budget of IFMS? And where are we now on that budget? Perhaps a related question: how much has been spent on IFMS? Since this project started, I hear you are starting as early as 1995 and when the democratic government came in and so on. So can you just give a high level as to exactly how much have we put in, how much of the budget, where are we now, how much has been used of that budget, and if you like, of that investment that people of South Africa have made to IFMS, what is the return that they can point at that they have received to date? A related question would be, you moved from this thing being customized and you said, let's go to off-the-shelf type of an approach with Oracle. So don't you think that this project is too big and complex for it to be executed? For me, it's a question of is it not another Kusile or Midupi of some sort in the IT sector? With CETA and the Public Service and Administration, have you been able to perhaps call the involvement of your political principals to try and resolve whatever impasse may be there. A related question, where else have we seen the system operating in terms of benchmarking? So when we started with it, because it's very clear that we are so married to it, if you could just share with the committee. Well, I ask about the budget mandate as the news, perhaps to say, as this administration, how long has been involved with this project?
Hey, do you want me to come in?
No, just the last one, sorry. I'm picking up the last one. The irregularities that have been referred to other law enforcement agencies and so on. I agree with you. That is the ones that is there. There's very little that you can do. For us, since it's something that we have budgeted for. This year, many other years before, you are saying this project is going to be ready 2023-2024. But I also see a contradiction in that, because you are now giving us the end date, but at the same time, the main of these variables which are not controllable, amongst them the other departments and CETA who are involved. Don't you find it a contradiction in those two statements? Thank you very much. Please, with your team, respond to those questions.
No, thank you, Chair, and thanks for all the questions to honourable members. And let me, I'm let me say, I mean, I agree with you. The past doesn't matter where we are, and we need to solve the problem quickly. The problem has been going on for far too long. And certainly, I think the Treasury has a lot of respect for the office of the AG. It's a very important institution. And we have very good relationships with the AG, even where we have differences, and we do have sometimes sharp differences, and there are dispute mechanisms that we have, and we're trying to explore within those mechanisms which to resolve it. We certainly take into account, I mean, how these issues are resolved. I think what I was trying to just put to honorable members is we are in a long-term contract, and in a way, whatever we do, whether we continue, and Chair, you pointed out, is there a contradiction? I think the implementation by Tikaledi can come in by 2023-24 was the objective that we've set. And yes, it will likely need to be reviewed for full implementation, depending on what milestones we reach before that. So, I've certainly prioritized, I think, solving this problem that's still there in the department either way, that either we say we continue or we don't continue, but either way we're going to take losses and it will be deemed to be fruitless expenditure under the current dispensation. I guess what I was just trying to say is the fruitless expenditure is therefore a consequence of the contract that's there. It's not because anybody is acting maliciously or there's anything funny happening, but the AG sees it in a particular way, but it's an expense that either way we'd have to meet. And it's certainly in the interest of the state to resolve it as quickly as possible, because the longer it's there, we're going to be in this kind of paralytic state. In terms of spending, so therefore, when we say there's underspending, you know, IFMS is the biggest project in the Treasury's own budget, once you take away the transfers to SARS and so on. And I'll let Laura come in on the underspending this year. I don't have before me the actual spending since the project was instituted, because I think if I remember, the project was between 400 and 500 million, I forget the exact figure, at the time to purchase the licenses. But there's a lot of complementary costs, including the costs of still running Purcell and Bass. And so if you wanted a longitudinal assessment of all the expenses, we'd have to come back to you on that. So I don't know if that's what you want to share, but I'll ask Laura just to comment on the immediate expenditure in a minute. So, and certainly I think we're not asking the committee to intervene in any of those issues. We will obviously complete the process with the AG. We'll certainly we've written letters and communicated, and having a steering committee meeting that was planned, or we'll be having one. The last one got postponed for some reason. And then, you know, I've certainly kept our political principal informed about where we are, but we haven't taken I think my predecessor may have taken the issues forward, but I think really want to resolve this problem either way. And so we've put in place processes to get resolution, and hopefully by the end of this financial year. Either way, there'll be the resolution on this. I think, Chair, just the other issue, you know, it's not just a national treasury, but I agree with you. We're a bunch of economists and financial experts. Whether we're the best people to run IT systems is a good question. But unfortunately, we're finding even the entities that are supposed to be doing that are actually not very good themselves necessarily. And so, you know, where and how government locates such projects and you know, if wishes were horses, I would say we don't want it in the treasury, let it be elsewhere. But I think given the financial management and the PFMA, in fact, has a clause that makes the treasury solely responsible for financial management systems. So I think it's an important area that we do need to take on. I don't know, Laura, do you want to just comment on the actual spending this year? I'm not sure you'd have the figures for the previous years or so.
Thank you so much, Mama. Certainly there has been underspend in this year, and that is because we had budgeted on the assumption that that the CETA's procurement process would be successful, and B, on our current methodology, which is to rapidly advance the implementation of IFNMS in order to catch up with previous delay. And so it was budgeted accordingly. We had to give money back. But certainly we will be able to provide the committee in writing the total budget. That was the original budget that was allocated. The expenditure in terms of IFMS 1, because the committee will know that work was done under IFMS 1 before Cabinet approved the pivot to the new methodology. We will provide the expenditure under IFMS 2 as well as what that expenditure is for, which is as we've indicated, is mainly for the support and maintenance. And that will give us the total spend to date as well as what's remaining on the budget. And then we will also include in that written submission what was the spend for this year and how much was returned. Mama, if I can just indicate that in terms of our milestones towards the 2024 full rollout, we are very sensitive to the fact that Treasury is highly dependent on outside processes in order to allow us to deliver. We had planned in terms of three processes. We varied those processes in order to increase our success. Unfortunately, they were not successful. However, what we've done in order for us to deliver on that day, and because we recognise that we just have to get this now implemented, is that we, with Dick Leddy, have put in place a range of mitigation measures, and those include our engagements with Oracle, it includes our engagements with CETA, as well as our leadership in order for us to pivot decision-making of IFMS back into Treasury to ensure that Oracle assists either in terms of the fees or in terms of the kinds of implementation we have and how we roll it out. So we are quietly optimistic that we will be able to, if all of our mitigation plans do come to fruition, that we will be able to that date. Also, Mama, just in terms of the process to the original decision, which countries we looked at in terms of benchmarking, as well as which countries have implemented a similar process of automating and modernizing, integrating their financial systems, we can certainly provide all of that information to the committee. We will need to go back to the original submissions and business case, but we definitely have them. And we can provide that in writing as a matter of urgency. Thank you.
Thanks, Laura. I'm trying to just see from my list what other questions there are, Chair, that we needed to answer. I haven't answered Honorable Kaiso's first question, which related to unlawful budgets. I think that was a reference to the earlier presentation on municipalities passing unlawful budgets. Certainly at national level, the budget is lawful. And I take his point, I think, on, you know, on resolving the issue with the AG. I think that I've talked about that. Chair, is there anything else that you need an answer for?
No, I think you and Laura have responded to the questions, and Laura has also promised the committee to come back with those figures that she doesn't you don't have, and I think that's welcome. We always stress that you don't want convenient answers where you still want to go and check and verify your numbers and bring them back. That would be very much welcome. And as I said, I didn't hear your comment. It's more of your comment when I say, don't you think this project is too complex? I said, don't you think that we are running another Nidupi and Kusile and so on? Hence my question.
I said, you know, I would, as I said, if I could start from scratch, I would have said in government, somebody else should do this. But unfortunately, I can't reverse the past. And I think currently, there's no other easy place to put it into government yet. So I think for now, we are stuck with it. And when you have a problem, you've got to kind of solve it, unless there's an easy way. I also liked your earlier comment on the author and the interpretation, which I agree with you. I thought that was a very nice comment, Chair. And I certainly feel like that author as well. Mm-hmm. But, the whole issue, I think, of IT, and I say this as a non-IT person, knowing that my knowledge on IT is dangerous, that... I think it's worth a conversation somewhere when you look across government and how we deal with IT systems, because this is just a financial management system. There's other departments that may need to come up with other systems that would assist in government. But something that we're looking at, I guess, we will look at how best that government can actually oversee these systems, because I think the current model of having a CETA or having one infrastructure department, those really, they haven't worked the last few years. Now, what's the reason for them not working, and how can we actually make those institutions do what was expected to be done? I think really comes up all the time.
I think the okay, perhaps before I come to that, I just wanted to make to stress the question, of course, that we are talking about that cost, and let's not venture into the opportunity cost of not having the system and so on. I think they are obvious. But number two, when I was saying that the project is complex and too big, I don't just mean it for treasure. I meant it for the country per se, irrespective of where it resides. I was just making that a passing comment. We have made another a comment, especially around infrastructure. Now, we've had interactions with both Department of Defense and the Public Works and Infrastructure, right? And it talks to that thing that the infrastructure within defense, is it an optimal way of this thing of having another department sort of managing your budget, and if certain things don't happen, you as a particular department, you take a fall, right? So and defense was feeling very, very strong about what is happening, and hence the concept of devolution of responsibilities
from public works and infrastructure to defense. But I think that happens with many other departments. I think a similar problem with SIT. Again, for us being here in Parliament, who would know, it should be from the executive and administration to say, this was the original intention of having this thing, it's not working. We think that that's how it should be. It can be improved, right? I've heard it many times where a lot of departments will complain about the speed with which things happen at CETA and ending up constraining them in many things that they want to do. But we would say as Parliament, definitely we don't want you to say we are overreaching. We want to see results. It's you in the administration and the executive who must solve those things if you think that they are a problem in as far as service delivery is concerned. I think you agree with me when it comes to that. Honourable members, let me take this opportunity to thank the acting DG, Mr. Momo Momia, and the team for the presentation. You are excused. You can go to the next committee. Acting DG, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Chair and honourable members.
Honourable members, let's go to the next item. The minutes. Let me check the minutes that we're looking at. Just a second. I'm looking for the dates of the minutes. Honourable members, we have got minutes of the 14th of September 2022. Do I have any mover for the adoption of these minutes?
Yes, Chair, I move. I've read them. I'm now at the airport.
Okay. Thank you, Honourable Lendana. Moving for the adoption of the minutes. Seconder?
Before Peters.
Honourable Peter, second. Thank you. The minutes of the 14th of September, duly adopted. Can you go to the minutes of the 16th of September? Mover.
Peters.
Honourable Peters moves for the adoption. Seconder. Anybody seconding Honourable Peters for the minutes of the 16th?
It's either you or Kaiso on.
Kaiso moves. I mean seconds.
Honourable Kaiso, seconds. Thank you. So the minutes of the 16th of September 2022 are to be adopted. Thank you, Honourable members. Can you go to agenda item number 6? Darren, do we have any announcements to make?
Chairperson, can you hear me? This is the last meeting for the term.
Yeah.
We are going to distribute the program for next term. In due course, I have drafted it. I just need to discuss it with yourself before distributing it. And then regarding the study tour, Chairperson, we received approval yesterday for the postponement. So we will now be traveling on the 15th of October and we'll be returning on the 23rd of October. Nomfuse and I are busy with the logistical arrangements. However, we will keep communicating with the members regarding progress in that regard. Thank you.
Okay. Anything about passports and so on? Just a catch up. Where do we start? Where do we go? That I can give a high level touch.
Yes. The passports. We sent the request through for the passports. Nomfuse will liaise directly with the members regarding the passports, where do they go, and what we are still waiting on parliamentary international relations to give us all that information. But we will keep in communication with the members, Chairperson. I don't have all the answers for now.
Okay. Let's keep communicating with the other members then. And then other members will be having Mr. Darren and Musa Zamisa as the support staff of the committee. We only got the allowance of two people. Let's mute. Let's mute our Peter. Please mute. Peter, mute, please. Thank you. I was getting a break door when you meet meeting. Honourable members, I was saying that Darren and Musa will be the two people giving the committee the support. I think another good thing is that we managed to get all the members going. We're arguing that it's very important, looking at the research which went into that, that all committee members go. This thing of having half going was not going to be the most optimal thing. In terms of cost-benefit analysis, it was not helping us, but thankfully, leadership in Parliament allowed the committee to continue with the standard tour. But remember, let me take this opportunity. One thing which is outstanding, it's the report of our oversight management working on that, and at the right time we'll come back to the committee. Let me take this opportunity just to thank all of you for this term and your dedication and the issues that you have raised to try and improve oversight of the committee. As you know that in the next term, when we come back, the main thing will be the mid-term budget policy statement and GBS. That will be dealing with in that is the last term of the calendar year. Yes, thank you very much. Take care. That takes us to the end of the meeting.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. Take care too.
Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you.